Part 8. In crowds, it is stupidity and not mother wit that is accumulated. Gustave Le Bon. A sea of terror.
Welcome, citizens and citizenesses, to this 16th biannual general meeting of Adur's Solar Society. Somewhat delayed, I regret to say, by events.
Kurnsbeck, understated in a rough-spun waistcoat with a flavour of workman's apron, held up his broad hands for silence, though more from habit than necessity. The members used to raise the roof. Now they sat in anxious silence.
With thanks to our distinguished patron, Citizeness Brock.
Kurnsbeck gestured in the vague direction of the box where Savine sat. She forced an awkward smile and eased deeper into the shadows. She had spent half her life trying to stand out from the crowd, but only fools made themselves conspicuous these days.
I come before you full of optimism,
called Kurnsbeck with the sweaty demeanour of a peddler who would never buy what he was being forced to sell.
The great change offers us brave new opportunities. Workers flock to the cities,
or were driven there by cold, hunger and war to freeze on the roads or starve in the doorways.
Regulations are relaxed,
because no one knew who was in charge or whether anything would be enforced.
Land long occupied becomes available,
chiefly through the mechanism of uncontrolled fire. He neglected to mention the worsening shortages of food, coal, and raw materials, the dangers of riot and summary arrest, or the never-ending trials for profiteering, speculation, and usury. The many empty seats in the audience testified to them more eloquently than even the great machinist ever could.
Our friends in Starakland, Angland, and Westport are a little wary.
On the verge of declaring their secession from the Union, indeed.
Traditional markets may for now have been closed off, but a world of possibilities opens up for the enterprising innovator.
Those not rendered into pulp at the foot of the Tower of Chains.
There is a grand harvest to be reaped, not merely material, but far more importantly, moral, social, and cultural.
If one could overlook the burners' slogans daubed on every mill and manufactory.
With liberty and equality added to our traditional virtues of imagination and endeavour, the great change will surely bring prosperity to all its children,
those it did not eat alive. Kurnsbeck spread his arms wide as he built to a crescendo of insincerity.
No man can stop, nor would any man want to stop, progress.
Nobody dared stand out by being first to clap, and so an agonizing silence stretched, huge and heavy. It struck Savine as profoundly strange that out in the foyer, beneath the two great chandeliers and the broken plaster where the third had once hung, no one was screaming. No one wept, vomited, or tore at their faces with their fingernails. Life simply went on. The knots of conversation, the babble of business, the offers, the promises, the investments of a lifetime.
Where's old Hogbeck? Someone was asking. Arrested?
Killed himself testing a flying balloon, the old fool. Hoped to swoop down and carry away young citizenesses, presumably.
No woman ever entered his basket and emerged with virtue intact. And Zillman?
Ruined. Bet everything he had on glazing, what with all the windows being smashed. Trouble is, no one's bothering to replace the bastards in case they're smashed again tomorrow.
Nothing was more changed by the great change than fashion. Rich men's costume had gained workmen's flourishes, while the ideal for women was the artless shepherdess. Cheeks were painted slapdashed pink, while fans had become a loathed aristocratic affectation. Some women had stopped wearing wigs altogether, proudly displaying their conspicuously lifeless actual hair as if it was a badge of revolutionary pride. Exotic curios had been all the rage. Now anything foreign was scorned with a patriotic side-eye. Jewels had plunged in popularity, but fortunes were spent on dried flowers and woven grasses. It was a wonder no one had brought a herd of goats as an accessory. Nurturing bosoms were thrust up so high they presented a danger of suffocation to bystanders. The great change had brought freedom to all, of course, but the corsetry of the citizeness was, if anything, even more constricting than that endured by a lady of King Jazal's reign.
"Equality never quite comes in equal shares," murmured Savine. "I am from Gurkul," said Zuri, checking the watch. "I am well aware."
"Nothing sells but coupling and pratfalls," the theatre's owner was lamenting to an acquaintance in a quavering bass. "Once great Juven's exhortation to the senators echoed from the rafters. Now we watch a fat man trip over the night pot and pretty people pretend to fuck. Can we not admit that fucking has always been popular? I suppose these days I hardly know whether I'm hiring actors or whores. There's a difference," followed by stutters of forced laughter. They all were skaters on thin ice, their smiles stretched tight over their terror, gliding on as the cracks shot out beneath them. People startled at every noise in the street, expecting burners to burst into the theatre and drag away the membership of the Solar Society wholesale. The workmen of Adua had lived in constant fear of the people in this room. Now it was their turn. But life went on, even as the world simultaneously froze and burned around them. What was the alternative?
"Credit," a man with immense side whiskers frothed. "There's no bloody credit anywhere. All the banks are shuttered."
"Most of the bankers are in the House of Truth. House of Purity. The ones who haven't taken the long drop yet, anyway. Usury. Is that even a crime?
If it is, aren't we all guilty?
If Pike wanted to strangle business, he's gone about it the right way."
Savine had once felt nowhere more at home than here, flitting from one opportunity to another, hopes and dreams left wrecked in her wake. Now all she wanted was to slit the laces of her corset and sag down with her children, slap the stopper from the decanter, and never put it back.
"By the fates," she muttered, "I have become my mother."
"There are worse things one could become," said Zuri. It had all been so much more fun with a ready supply of pearl dust and no ever-present threat of death. But there was no pearl dust to be had, and life had never been cheaper.
"I hear old Marnavant took the long drop," someone brayed carelessly.
"So who's running things at the patent office now?"
"You assume there is still a patent office? Last I heard, they were keeping pigs in the place."
"Count yourself lucky if it's just your ideas that are stolen. Yosland lost every stick of furniture in the uprising. They made off with his damn doors."
"At least during King Jazal's reign, one knew who to bloody bribe."
"Citizeness Savine."
"Citizeness Celeste."
If simplicity was the fashion, Celeste Huygen bucked the trend. Her look was bread-rioting Grand Duchess, militant millionaire with a dash of top-end prostitute. Dark rubies spilled down her neck like blood from a slit throat, and her black dress was artfully slashed to show Berner's scarlet. Most women had stopped wearing swords. Having Leo's wounds in her face had entirely killed Savine's appetite for tools of death. Celeste had gone the other way, with a genuine horseman's axe dangling from her crimson sash.
"You look wonderful."
Savine had been aiming at Ernest, but had not the history to pull it off, and Celeste's bosom heaved with offence. Probably there was nothing Savine could have said that would not have caused offence, and certainly nothing that would have stopped that bosom heaving. Celeste gave Savine a sneering look up and down.
"You look motherly."
That would once have been an insult punishable by a slow social death meticulously engineered. Now it hardly drew a shrug.
"After the year I've had..."
The aftermath of Valbec, her marriage to Leo, their treason against the king, the mass violence of the battle at Stauffenbeck, the almost hanging of her husband, the even greater violence of the Great Change, the birth of her children, the coming of Judge and the whole world slowly, painfully ripping apart. Sabine realized she had put a hand to the well-powdered scar on her forehead and forced it back down.
"I'm only surprised I look alive. I spend much of my time at the court of the people these days. You really should see your husband address the representatives. He still makes the ladies gasp up in the balcony. Quite the man, even if he is half a man now."
Sabine smiled.
"As tired as I am, half is more than I can manage. Fancy, and you used to have such an appetite."
Celeste spun away, that ridiculous axe bouncing against her leg.
"Haven't you heard?" Savine muttered wearily at her back. "Everything is changed."
"Citizeness Brock." A young man she did not know, with cheap clothes and the light of ambition in his eyes. "Would you have a moment to hear about a new type of mirror? Tougher, clearer, cheaper. We'll put those swine in Viserine out of business.
I fear you must do it without me."
She used to swoop on every hint of opportunity, hawk-eyed, eagle-taloned, every mark clawed up a point triumphantly scored against the world. Now the thought of profits made her sick, with a little guilt, when she thought of the bread queues, the homeless in the doorways, the dead in the frozen graveyards, with a lot of fear when she thought of them rendered into accusations in the court of the people, screamed from the benches, flung down from the public galleries. It was coming. She knew it was coming. They all would have their moment in the dock. She pressed a smile down on top of her dread, like the lid on a box of snakes.
"But, Citizeness, I wish you every success, but I am not seeking to make money. I am looking for opportunities to give it away."
A flicker of incomprehension, and the man drifted on.
"All that effort to acquire it."
Kernsbeck stood, shaking his head.
"And now you're simply giving it away. Do you really suppose charity will help, Savine?"
"We can hope," she said, pressing his hand.
"We can."
He had lost weight. He looked a shadow of himself.
"But given where we are, it might be better if we didn't."
It was a very carefully judged address this year.
"It was all shit, but what should I say? The truth? I'm no keener on climbing the Tower of Chains than anyone else, though no one will need to climb soon."
He dabbed at his sweaty forehead with a handkerchief.
"I've been commissioned to install a hoist."
"I'm sorry?"
"The burners can't march the prisoners up the stairway fast enough. They cry, they faint, they beg for mercy. Judge wants me to build a steam-powered platform that can hold 2 dozen at a time."
Savine's skin prickled under her dress.
"Oh."
What else could be said to that?
"When I was a boy," muttered Kernsbeck, "patriotism was kissing the flag and pretending to love the king. Now suddenly it's spitting on the king and having poor furniture. One must keep a close eye on the current definitions. To be unpatriotic would be terrible. To be patriotic in the wrong way could be fatal. I feel I can admit to you, as an old friend, that since the Great Change, I am constantly terrified."
He gave a little laugh, but she could see tears on his cheeks. He removed his lenses and wiped them on the back of his sleeve. Savine put a gentle hand on his arm.
I hardly think you are alone in that.
I freely admit that I have never been a brave man. Once, out in the far country, I met a fellow called Lamb, who had travelled hundreds of miles, facing down ghosts and mercenaries and dragon people, and every danger, searching for his children. Whatever the odds, he simply would not be cowed. I think about him often. I wish I was more like him, but every day out there I was scared. You are an inventor. She took his hot, limp, sticky hand between hers. You have done more good in the world than 1,000 warriors. Show me someone who denies it and I'll spit in their eye. He gave a brittle smile. I believe you would.
Citizeness Brook.
The speaker had curly hair and was unremarkable apart from his different coloured eyes.
I was hoping I might see you here.
Citizen Sulphur, is that the right term of address for a Magus?
I hardly know the right terms for anything these days. Even if I did, I fear they would be the wrong ones by tomorrow morning.
What brings you back to the Solar Society?
I have a great deal of money to invest, in fact.
And you will not be short of friends here. Commissioner Pike's tireless crusade against the banks has made investment hard to come by.
I understand you are providing bread and coal to the poor. Perhaps we might do some good together. Would you consider accepting a loan?
Savine felt a coldness on the back of her neck. She remembered her father's words about Magi, about Baez, about Valentin Bulk. She made sure she kept smiling, but she made sure she was firm.
I am afraid I cannot help you.
Oh, what a shame. I remember the last time we met on the docks of Ostenhorn, before your rebellion against the crown. You could not help me then, either. That proved a rather notable mistake.
Holding on to her smile took some effort.
Far from the only one I have made. Even so, you understand a woman must not put herself in too much debt.
She must take care of the partners she chooses.
Precisely.
But even more over those she turns down.
The softer he talked, the more worried she became.
A woman with secrets especially.
She wished she had a fan now so she could brush him off with it.
We all have secrets, Master Sulphur.
We are not all bastard offspring of a king.
Her smile crumpled. Time seemed to slow. She felt cold and burning hot at once. The foyer was an overbright whirl of faces, keen ears, judging eyes.
Perhaps you might reconsider?
Sulphur had drifted very close.
The crown has become an awful weight to carry.
The back of his hand brushed her arm.
And since King Orso has no heir, perhaps one of your children might inherit it.
His lips curled back to show sharp teeth.
Now tell me, which popped out first, the boy or the...
I'll fucking kill you!
She snarled in his face, catching his jacket in her trembling fist.
Threaten my children! I'll see you dead!
He looked far less surprised than she was, and only for a moment. Then he let his head drop on one side.
You really would have been my master's first choice. But in my experience, and yours too, I dare say, one never has to go far to find someone who will take your money. Or your secrets.
Citizeness Huygen!
He brushed off her limp hand and stepped away into the crowd.
A moment of your time.
Savine saw Celeste's eyes dart over, as keen for any trace of opportunity as her own had once been. She tried to smile, but the muscles in her face would not work the way they used to. She could not see Zuri. The blood was pulsing behind her eyes. Her instinct was to run, to the docks, then Angland, Styria, distant Thond, for that matter. But she knew she was watched. She would not get far with two babies. And to run would be to admit her guilt. Of what, she hardly knew. They would think of something.